Welcome, folks, to episode 3820 of the Survival Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about artificial intelligence, and our first heckler has already showed up. Someone who is, I was trying to answer him. He's in the live chat, right? Because we're live today, right? So he said, let me read it so I get it completely right here, okay? This is from JM. JM says, I truly wish Jack would stop normalizing AI usage. These corporations are literally building a matrix-like prison that people are willing to be plugging themselves into, and he acts like it's good. Do you know what you call that? You call that a person who's in denial of reality. That's what you call that. Today's show actually is going to go into a lot of the things that could be really bad shit that come from AI. Really bad shit. Like, imagine you work for a company, but your boss is actually an AI agent. Does that sound like it's normalizing it, right? See, here's the problem, and this is why I'm doing this show. And this is why I've done all of these shows about AI. And this is why I push using AI, because of this kind of nonsense. Imagine it's 1998, and your solution to the internet is, it's going to be used to enslave us. They're going to use it to control our minds. It's going to be a propaganda tool, so I'm not going to use the internet. How did your fucking life work out over the next 10 to 15 years if you did that? I mean, if you were like 80, I guess it didn't matter. But I mean, if you were still like building a career, building a life, trying to get anything done with yourself, building a business, it wasn't an option, was it? It really was. I mean, early on, people tried to pretend it was. Early on, big giant stores, right, big giant well-known brands, they came out with an internet version of their store, but they were separated, right? It wasn't like you could order it online and go pick it up at the store, right? And they had their own division, and they had it siloed in case it failed because the internet was going to be a fad. And in many instances, the only thing left of some of these brands today, they were smart enough to at least put their toe in the water in 1996, 1998, 1999, et cetera, right? Is their internet presence. It's all they have. Have you been to a mall lately? No. I never really enjoyed them anyway, but I understand that people used to go to malls, right? People used to hang out there. It used to be fun. People used to shop and go to the food court. The mall is all but dead in America. Why? The internet. We all know this. This is going to be an everything you own is going to have AI as a piece of it. And I am going to dig into the dark side of this today. I really am. And I'm going to come away with the same thing that I've told you over and over again, but you better learn how to use it. You're either going to use it or it's going to use you. And again, now, if I were, 80 years old, and I didn't want to deal with this, I wouldn't, and it wouldn't matter. And if you're 60, honestly, and your retirement's already secured, whatever, do what you want. But if you still have a future to build, a job to do, if you're going to have a job of any kind, if you're going to work for anybody, you better understand this. Well, I just do, assembly line, whatever work. Well, no, your manager is going to be freaking using AI to manage you. And when you don't know how something works, when you don't understand how something works, then it can be leveraged against you more powerfully than when you do. Is the internet a tool of mental control and propaganda? Sure it is. Do you use the internet? Even though it's a tool of mental control and propaganda, are you able to discern more truth or less truth because of the internet? It's about the operator. So this whole nonsense that we're just going to like push this underneath the rug and it'll go away. Or if Jack talks about it, well, then it'll take over. But if Jack would just shut up and stop normalizing it, whatever the fuck that means, right? Then it would go away. It's all Jack's fault. It's Jack's fault and people like Jack. If Jack and people like Jack didn't tell people to use AI when people are using it anyway, if they didn't help them use it right, better, and more correctly, if they didn't help them get better results out of it, if they didn't show them how to understand the manipulation, if they weren't out teaching them how to operate the tool instead of be operated by the tool, well, then everything would be okay. You know how stupid that sounds? Very, 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 very stupid. You can't ignore this. Just like in the late 1800s, you couldn't ignore the radio and the telephone. Marconi and Bell put it out in the world, and that was it. Late 1800s, early 1900s, you couldn't ignore electricity. By the 1930s and 40s, you could only ignore television at your own peril. You think this is any different? It's never any different. It's always different, and it's always the same. So we're going to dig into this deep today. If you're new to the Survival Podcast, please consider subscribing to us. If you're watching us on YouTube, especially if you're not here live where you can talk to other people and figure out what's going on, this is a podcast, and we've been doing this for over 18 years together here at the Survival Podcast, episode 3820 today. But this is not an AI podcast. This is a podcast episode about AI. We talk about all the things you need to do to adapt to the changing world and the changing times. So please, if this is your first experience with us, stick around. Click the like for me. Hit that thumbs up. Hit that bell so you get notified if you're on YouTube. If you're on any of the podcast services, if you've never given us a review, it'd be great if you did. Now, I was checking in some like the second and third tier podcast services today. And, man, we have followings everywhere. I did like checked out like Pocket Cast. We have like 9,000. I've never even heard of it except that I put it on our site back when I got a big list of them. So I was clicking through. It was like 9,000 subscribers on some third tier podcast thing. So there's a lot of different ways you can stay in touch with us. Whatever your favorite app is, you can find us there. Roke asked, what am I drinking? I said this the other day. It looks kind of fruity because it's pink. This is what my wife could find for me. But it's a brand of kombucha called Liquid Remedy, and it has no sugar in it. It is got a little bit of erythritol to give it a little bit of sweetness, but not much. It's not overly sweet. And the way they handle the sugar from you have to give it sugar to make kombucha is they ferment it longer until they ferment all the sugar out of it. So anyway, with that, let's go ahead and thank our sponsors of the day today, and then we'll get into this episode. You know, if you followed us for a long time, then you're familiar with John Pugliano, who is the host of the Wealth Steading podcast. He's also an excellent money manager. And in his podcast, he tells you what he's doing with his money and how it relates to world events and how those world events work with the decisions he's making with his money and his clients' money. His latest episode was put out on March the 12th, Iran War, Contrarian, Cynically Optimistic Perspective. It's a really interesting episode. It's not that long. You might want to check that out. It's got about 500 episodes you can go through. And check John out, man. He is just a really great guy. Not only is he a great investment manager, and not only does he share his information with you, he's a prepper like us. He's a ham radio operator. He's a reloader. He casts his own freaking bullets, for God's sakes. He's a real deal. He's got the preps, and he walks the walk and talks the talk. Check him out today at wealthsteading.com, where you can learn to grow your wealth like you grow a garden. Next up today, knifekits.com, who you know, they just renewed with us because their card on file expired, like their expiration date came up on their card, so they had to renew. And I told Steve over there, I said, you might be the longest running sponsor of any podcast ever, continuous in the history of podcasting, because he's been with us since 2009, I think, is actually when I picked them up. It was either 2009 or 2010. So it's 15 or 16 years that these guys have supported our show. And you know what he said? I'm signing right back up. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. So check them out today, knifekits.com, where you can build a knife no matter what your skill level is. You can get really cool raw materials. You can get kit form knives that are easy to put together, instructionals. You can get great stuff for your Kydex holsters and your leather sheaths and everything else. Check them out today at knifekits.com, a company that does what they say and says what they do right in the name, Knife Kits. All right, let's get into this. I want to talk to you about why I'm doing this topic today. We did hit on it a little bit with our heckler at the beginning. You know, don't Jack's normalizing AI. They're turning it into a prison. I actually have a great deal of concern that AI will become an incredibly useful tool to control the population. But I also believe, at least in our country, unless we're completely stupid and continue down our road to oblivion at light speed or something, we will have the choice whether we are used or whether we use it. What you are not going to have a choice to do is ignore it, to get away from it. The only way you're going to not have AI in your life, because you already do, whether you realize it or not, AI is making decisions on what you see on YouTube right now. just as one example. But the only way you're not going to have it in your life, you have to get rid of the cell phone. Just get rid of it. Every cell phone is going to have AI just built right into it. That's already happening. Even your email programs have a, like, if you're an old guy like me, you use Outlook. There's AI built into Outlook now. There's AI built into the operating systems of your computer. The Siri will be a full AI agent if you're an Apple user soon, and whatever they call the one on Android, right? They'll be full operational AI assistants in time. Everything, every major company is going to apply AI technology into their operations. They will all do it differently, but they're all going to do it. It's not going to go away. And what I actually want to start out with, though, I want to let you guys know, we do have our AI course coming up. You want to learn how to use AI to build a business. I'm sure that our friend would tell you that's a bad idea, too. God forbid you actually build a successful business, earn your own money, set your own schedule, determine your own destiny. That's a terrible way to stay out of the control of corporations, isn't it? Anyway, AI is great for that. We have an AI course for solopreneurs. You can get over to jackslaws.com, look at the top, you see a little banner up there. Click that and sign up, and that'll get you an email that'll tell you when it's time to order, because it's going to be a closed course again. 100 people is all we take per sign up, and it is going to be on May the 4th is when we're going to actually launch the sale. May the 4th be with you. That said, if you do not pre-register, you will not get in. It just doesn't happen. All right, let's go ahead and dig into kind of this topic. I want to start out with, and I think some of you really need this based on some comments here. What exactly is AI as we think of it as users, as customers, as consumers on this side of the equation today, right? And somebody's mentioned jobs. I usually ignore the chat, AI consultant jobs will explode, blah, blah, blah. Here's the reality, though. Like, and Brooke is making a positive point here, so I'm not picking on Brooke. What companies are hiring the most people today in the tech sector? AI companies. If AI can do all the shit without humans, then why are the AI companies building AI using humans to build AI instead of using AI to build more AI? And they are using AI to build more AI, but at the direction and discretion of a human. This is a workflow accelerator if you maintain the position of thought leader. So one of the big problems we have is I don't think people actually know what AI is. I think that you hear the word intelligence, but your brain is not processing the word artificial as it means. If I say artificial sweetener, you don't think it's sugar. You know it's synthetic. It's artificial. It's not real. So it's not intelligent. It's artificial. Fake. Artificial means fake intelligence. And these are just computer tools that are formatted in a way to interface with us so that we have a conversational back and forth with them. And that brings us to our primary AI tool that people think of today, and that is our LLMs, or large language models. This is ChatGPT. This is Google Gemini, right? This is whatever the fuck they call it on Facebook, right? This is Rufus on Amazon that helps you make purchasing decisions, right? These are tools that act like a chat with another party, but that party happens to be a computer. And this is not like some super intelligent being somewhere that sits around contemplating things. It only responds when it's asked, when it's given a directive. Now, that directive may take a while. Some of these things can be given directives, and they might be working for a day before they give a final output in some extreme versions thereof. But that's all at the direction of somebody inputting a command, inputting a prompt. They're not sitting around going, today I'm going to take over more of the world. That's not what it is. It is a very advanced version of when you pick your cell phone up and you go, hey, are you going to be at, and it says work, school, class, and you have predictive text. That's what it really is. It just has access to the internet and huge amounts of raked, combed, and cached data. And so when you give it a question or give it a task, it's able to draw on those and format it into a speech-like model that makes you feel like you're talking to another thing. But it's not intelligent. And that's an LLM. That's the thing that most of us use. I would say the thing that's probably maybe even used more, just maybe less hours because it's a quicker output, are image tools. Midjourney, DALL-E, some of the Grok Imagine, right? All of these tools are able to generate an image off a prompt or generate a video off a prompt or turn a picture into a video or take elements out of a picture or add elements into a picture. And this is an area that it gets a lot of eyeballs and attention because it's cool. And it seems like, hey, we're going to be able to replace Hollywood and there'll be no screenwriters and no actors. But it doesn't work that way. Yeah, you can have AI spit out a 30-second clip that looks super high-end like a Marvel movie or something, but it doesn't have any soul. It doesn't have any true storyline to it. And AI can produce all that, but not without a human. It needs a human to do that. And then the other big weakness, I think, of the image tools right now is, it's weird to me that they haven't skinned this. So, like, you go to Midjourney, you make an image, and you're like, it's so close, but you try to change the prompt. It completely changes the image. You're like, fuck, I'll just leave it alone. But no, you take that image and you go over to Gemini, which sucks at image generation by itself, and say, take this image and change the purple in it to a darker purple. And it does it instantly and perfectly. And why we can't have that work with Midjourney yet, maybe I haven't discovered that they've added it yet, but it is what it is, right? So there's some limits there on what the image tools will do. But that was the other big one. And then there's the third one, and this is the one that a lot less people use. These would be enhanced LLMs. And, in fact, many of the LLMs you use have an enhanced component to them. These are things that can take action. They can write code. Okay? They can email you and tell you that you asked to be emailed on this day and reminded of a thing, and they can remember that in your account and do that. And you get, even though you're outside the AI contacts you through a means like text or email or something like that. They can compile research and execute tasks. Google's Gemini in, I think it's Deep Think or Deep Thought or something like that mode. I have been able to do things with that I've taken 3 weeks of work down to about 3 hours just experimenting with what I used to do for companies and for investment stuff and things like that, such as like an analysis of an investment sector, preparing a brief on that sector and, you know, like a SWOT analysis of it and things like that. I've had very deep, long conversations with Gemini itself. Then you take that entire conversation, cut and paste into a document, switch over to the deep think mode and give it the task and do that task in discussion with Gemini on the regular chat side. This is what I'm going to want. And then you give it to deep think and deep think goes to work. And 20 minutes later, it spits out a 16-page document that, again, would have took me weeks to compile the data for before I made the document, something that you would hand to a potential investor, a potential partner, or someone that you were presenting an idea to, something like a white paper. And it's fantastic for that. And this is the power that most people never exercise right now. And that's what we're actually talking about that has consumer level applications today. For the most people, there's higher end things, there's self-hosted options, there's all kinds of things. But when we talk about AI, that's what we're talking about. And none of this is a computer that sits and thinks. None of this is a computer that makes a decision. This is a computer that generates an output when prompted to do so. Now, it does a lot of calculations and angling, but I can have two different conversations about the same subject with the same AI unit, just not in my account where it knows who I am, and get very drastically different results. A lot of people think that's bad. Well, I always put it this way. I give one guy a set of tools, right, and some lumber and some nails and screws and shit, and he builds a house. I give it to another guy. He builds furniture, and I give it to another guy, and he nails the board to his hand. That means the user, the operator, has control. The fact that the output is variable means that you have control and influence over the output. And that is the primary thing you have to remember and value and ensure that you're controlling the output. And I know it gets into them, well, how I know it's not telling me what I want to hear. Well, if you're talking to it about emotional subjects or highly charged political subjects, it probably will tell you what you want to hear. But all you have to do then is say, make the counter case. Then you can decide for yourself. It'll make a very excellent counter case 99% of the time. But why I'm doing this today is really more about what billionaires are saying and doing than AI in itself. And what you guys are telling me, especially ones that are all afraid and Luddite about it, want to run away and hide and pretend it's not there. I noticed over the past few weeks how much buzz there is going around, like the Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, right? Mark Zuckerberg, Peter Thiel's space with AI. First of all, they're all throwing money at AI and not just their own direct concerns. Like Thiel just threw a whole shitload of money at like an AI company that's building collars for cows for herd management, right? Using AI for things like that. So when that happens, we have to start looking at what the billionaires are saying. And we have to start understanding what's really going on. Number one is when you have multiple billionaires, including some that don't quite get along, kind of all singing from the same sheet of music, it should set off the hackles the same way when you hear something is truly bipartisan for once in D.C. That means that people are getting screwed when you hear that. When billionaires start all talking from the same sheet of music and start talking about what's coming, and it's not just like one eccentric Elon Musk saying it, but like the choir is in matching chorus with each other, then it is now not a prediction. It's a prophecy. It's planning. This is being planned. And they have the horsepower, the money, the resources to make it happen. And they know they have that power. And they know they're all going to do it. So now they're going to fulfill that prophecy. We've had people like Elon Musk predicting an Optimus robot in every home. Kind of like, if you think about it, he's really modeled his entire business model on Henry Ford, so a Model T in every driveway. Can have any color you want as long as it's black, right? I guess you can have any color Optimus you want as long as it's black and white. I'm sure they'll have custom paint jobs on that thing sooner or later, right? It's highly likely to happen, just not exactly the way they say it will, though. People think billionaires have more power than they do and less power than they do at the same time. They can make a macro occur, but they cannot control once they push things into motion how it actually turns out. Think about all the billionaires and high-level millionaires who got wrecked in the dot-com collapse. They were all right about the internet being the next big thing. But there's only so many room for people in the pool for each little aspect, each little niche that they go into, right? Will the cow collar AI thing work? Maybe. There's probably a much easier way to do that than a collar. I mean, just a chip would be enough, right, with monitoring equipment out on your ranch. But if it does work, I can assure you we only really need one company that does that. Even though we're talking like millions and millions and millions of cows, right? There's still only so much market for that. So even when we get into the sub niches here, we still have a limited market. And so not everybody can win is what I'm getting at. Really, though, when you're looking at what the billionaires are doing, don't pay so much attention to what they're saying loudly and out front. Read between the lines and look at what they're doing and what's actually going on. And what you can see that they're all doing right now is not just taking a position in AI, but putting AI into a position within their organizations. And I want you to understand the word I just used. I was very intentional. Putting AI into a position in their company. Who else do you put into positions in your company? Employees. And they're not just empowering their employees with AI. They're replacing employees with AI. And we're going to get deeper into why the people that get replaced may not be the people you think are going to get replaced. And what that might actually mean for you. And one of the big things that they're saying right now is that everybody will have their own custom AI. Now, it doesn't mean that it won't be owned by, you know, OpenAI and its ChatGPT or its Gemini or its Grok. What they're saying is everybody will have, like, you know, Jax AI that's dedicated to me. And I guess ChatGPT in my account, since it's known me and I've worked with it for 3 years, is pretty dialed in on what I want at this point. But it still loses things chat to chat. I build custom AI agents all the time. I have a custom AI agent that's a chef that I can ask chef questions to. I have a custom AI agent that when I want sources to back up claims, goes out and finds me those sources, verifies those sources, vets those sources, reports them back to me. And when I click on the link that says where the source is, some bitch, the source is actually there. Because if you don't do that, you'll get a lot of claims from hallucination and memory from AI still. And when you click that link, there's nothing there. When you tell it there's nothing there, it says, yes, there is. No, there isn't. See, I'm telling you, it's not as smart as you think it is. But when you give it explicit instructions and then you canonize that into a custom agent, you get strikingly different results. Okay? Now, what that means when you have a Mark Zuckerberg saying everybody will have a custom AI does not mean you'll do what I just said. It does not mean that you will build your own for each individual thing that you want. It means they will provide one to you that's tailor-based to you based on your needs, wants, likes, and desires, including probably things like scrubbing all known social media by you, for you, and about you so that it can help you. Okay? And what does custom AI for everyone, what could that look like long-term? Well, number one, you get into something called, and this is why the people that want to like bury their head in the sand, this is not going to work. I call this default compliance. In other words, you will use the AI will use you, and you will like it. Like you will own nothing and be, and you will like it, right? And you'll own nothing to be happy. You will be owned by AI and you will be happy. That's what you get if you do not take an active role here is default compliance. And you'll end up with that because once it's everywhere, it is used by everyone for everything. Again, unless you're going to throw away your cell phone, throw away your computer, throw away your TV set. And we have smart TVs, right? We've had smart TVs a long time. Do you watch Netflix? AI is going to drive Netflix. I predict you're going to have a streaming service in the future that's going to work like this. You decide the type of movie you want to see. You enter a few things, and it builds the movie for you. You don't believe me? That's okay. There's a lot of things I said you didn't believe that happened. You remember the old 1980s, 1970s books, the Scholastic Readers thing where they would have the book fairs at school, right? Remember the Choose Your Own Adventure? I see that coming too. I see being able to insert yourself into your favorite sci-fi movie or sci-fi series as a character and view the entire movie or episode in like first person, like a game, like a first person player game, things like that coming. So are you going to escape that? Are your kids going to escape that? Right. It's a demon or whatever. I can't help people like that. I'm sorry. It's the devil in the computer or whatever. I don't have enough after 18 years of this shit. I'll have it left in me to go deal with the person at that level anymore. That somebody else needs to help you. But if you're going to exist, you're going to have to deal with this. And if you don't, then you'll be into the role of compliance by default. You won't even know what you're looking at. You'll think, I don't use AI. Look at that. And that will be produced by AI and put in front of you by AI. And your response to it will be guided and controlled by AI if you don't know what you're looking at. Fragmentation as well, though. Custom AI agent for everybody. But when everybody's using AI and everything, you have kind of like a personal AI, like that's your personal assistant. But then you have like a corporate AI agent. And then you have like state AI agents. State AI, that sounds scary. Yeah, it is. We're going to get into that today. It's terrifying. what could be done with it, and how much, how many people could be swept up in things because of it. Because when it's told to do a thing, it will do a thing. And I don't mean go out and exterminate people. I mean, find people to send letters of demand to from the IRS would be one example. But what happens when you know you need to renew your paperwork with the state? Instead of waiting in a line to talk to Karen, you're going to talk to an AI agent in real time across the internet. And you're only going to deal with a human where it's absolutely required. And even if that does everything the way it's supposed to, it opens up all sorts of potentials for abuse. But it also creates this fragmentation contestation. In other words, you're getting one set of information from your personal tool, and you're getting a different set of information from your corporate tool. Your personal tool is probably likely tuned into your bias, and your corporate tool is tuned into their goals for what they want you to do. And the state's tool is turned to get you to act the way the state wants you to act, which includes making you not take certain actions. It's not an easy thing. We're also going to believe I have what's called the iPhone model. It's not a direct analogy here, but I want you to think about it this way. Right now, how many things does your smartphone, whether it's an iPhone, and I only use iPhone for this because they were first, right? iPhone, Android, any other smartphone maker that's still around. How many things does this device do that Apple or Android or whomever did absolutely nothing to enable that other than make it possible for somebody else to do it through applications? In other words, your iPhone, it looks like you got an older iPhone, right? That doesn't even have any of the built for AI stuff in it, but it can run apps. You can put ChatGPT on it, and you have AI in a box in your hand. But you can also put an app on it that tells you elevation of terrain and slope. You can also put an app on it that tells you where the sun will be in the sky on any given day just based on where you're standing. You can put an app on it that you can give it a few bits of information, and it'll identify the bird you see sitting in the tree that you don't know what it is. It's a calculator. It's a phone. Right. And they put that in there native, but those are just apps. You see what I'm saying? And I think AI is going to become more module like that. So the person will provide the device, but AI will go to the device. And we already had this in AI, and for some reason, OpenAI pulled a plug on it. There were tons of people building plugins. I don't know if you guys remember this. It was a very brief period of history. Happened about 2.5-3 years ago. ChatGPT starts taking off. There's a lot of things people want to do that doesn't do well. Also, there were these things called apps, plugin apps. And in your account, you could add these to your ChatGPT. And then one day, quietly, it just all went away. It wasn't because people weren't using them. I think it's because that model, ChatGPT, OpenAI, started looking at that and going, are we giving away too much control to external developers? We'll make it all work in-house. But there were a lot of tools. And I think what they did is they got a lot of ideas of what to build into the native capability of the tool. But I can see that coming back at some point. I can also see, like, tools being made for agent interoperability, which can be used for good or evil. That's one thing you have to understand. All these things have advantages and disadvantages to people, depending on how they're used. Everyone will have to have access to technology, though, and significant technology, right? Like, beyond being able to flip a switch and your light comes on, you're going to need internet access. You're going to need a device and whatever. And in America, that's pretty much handled. A person that does not have an internet-enabled device in America today absolutely does not want one. It can't be convinced. You know, I don't know if they're like some sort of religious sect or something like that. They're super old and they just don't care and it doesn't matter. It's something like that. But in a lot of places, that's not the case. And then there's always the case that, hey, but they don't have good enough technology. And if we're going to make this integrated into society, people need to have access to it. And this becomes, and you've seen it for a while now, the billionaire's case for UBI. Have you noticed the greedy billionaires, right, supposedly, who are the reason that none of these social programs exist, are the biggest advocates for universal basic income. Elon Musk, Andrew Yang, Peter Thiel, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, all have made cases for UBI. Now, this is where retards in the audience go, Jack's for UBI. I didn't say that. It's amazing. You can explain what's going on and people think that means you're rooting it on. I'm explaining what's happening. And there's a lot of potential to push the UBI model here. And then, of course, who distributes your UBI? Well, we can't trust people because they're wasteful. So the AIs will distribute the UBI to the people who deserve it, the good little boys and girls, do what they're told. Give it to everybody at first. You know, and I'm not going to say that this is a bad philosophy for parenting. I think it's a terrible way to run a country. But it worked for me when I was a parent. I remember when my son got up into like those high school years, like 14, 15, 16, 17, we gave him everything. As soon as he turned 16, got him a truck. But I said, if you want to get him one that fast, you should make him work harder. No, no, that one I need shit, he can go get it for me. And when he's not doing what I want, I can fucking take it away from him. See, by giving them all the things, then you have more leverage points. We had Joel Riles last week talk about escalation of force. It's kind of an escalation of force thing. Oh, that's right. You're not going to do what I asked you to do. You don't need your truck. What about work? I'll give you a lift. You can call me to pick you up. You might wait in the hall, in the parking lot for half an hour. But no, you're not even going to drive to work because I know what happens when you do that. You say I'd work an extra hour and you didn't. You went screwing off. And it's a very effective mechanism of control. But that's parental control that you're trying to teach the kid to no longer require. Not control of citizenry, but they'll do it. And UBI will be a levered tool that gets used in this. AI tools are going, if you have a thing where everybody has their own custom agent, but the custom agents are all Grok or ChatGPT or Google Gemini or fill in the blank. I don't think it's too long before they all start selling information back and forth to each other so all the AIs know you. Right? Your custom AI rats you out to the company that you get your custom AI from, who then rats you out to all the other, and they that way they can all collude. Why would they do that, though? Why would they want to do this? Think about this. What is the most targeted advertising available today? Who has the most targeted advertising platform available today? I would say it's probably Facebook, just very heavy to the boomer, older Gen X demographic. Younger people are on TikTok and what have you. But I would say it's Facebook. But if you want to say what are the companies with the most targeted advertising, in other words, what I mean by that, I want to advertise to people who are 16 to 30 years of old who have an interest in hip-hop music. Where do I go to do that? TV, radio, or TikTok. And that platform is able to build this incredibly complex algorithm that literally I can buy advertising and dial in all my demographic things. And is it 100%? No, but it's the most targeted we've ever had. How do they do that, though? They do that with data about their user, right? That the user data that we're supposedly so worried about. But AI has a level of understanding, if that's the right word for it, about you. That pales in the social media pales in comparison to understand. Think of the deep conversations people have with AI, especially when they start like setting their goals. Like, how about you can advertise specifically to people who want to become an engineer in a very specific subset of engineering? Well, AI would know that way better than Facebook would. So this becomes the most powerful marketing and advertising tool, and that means everybody's going to use it, not just companies that want to sell you shit, but your government. Political adversaries will use it on each other, et cetera, not just deep fake videos. That's only going to get you so far. The real tool is understanding what you're trying to manipulate, and movements as small as like 1% or 2% can sway elections, can sway votes in Congress, can change the entire makeup of a country, and sometimes overnight, just that small movement, which can be incrementally made over years because AI has patience to do it and can continuously adjust. That's why it's important that we don't ever see it consolidate to like there is one dominant AI player. That's actually the most dangerous thing there is. It doesn't matter if it's government or corporate. It doesn't matter. If it's one, it's dangerous. And watch in the near future, I'm talking 3 to 5 years, to start to see some of the really big AI companies buying each other out and merging. And I'm sure they'll have a great campaign to the FCC is why it's okay, and the FTC is why it's okay, right? They also will know how to motivate you. If you have a custom AI agent, it's going to know exactly what your motivations are. But to whose benefit? You? I mean, if you set up your AI to help coach you through your day and, like, do your positive affirmations and work out and eat right and get your tasks done, that's great. But what if your employer is doing that shit? Yeah, more on that in a minute. And then the ability to turbocharge social credit systems like they have in China. That's something that absolutely can happen here. I think we might be one of the last to go over that cliff as countries go. But, you know, when somebody says that can't happen here, it usually happens pretty quick after people start saying it. That's just how history seems to go. So I think that's a huge danger. Everybody gets their own custom AI. Everybody has a incredibly accurate dossier built on them. And then that can be plugged into, and then government can demand from all the corporations, all the custom shit. Pretty big case for self-hosted, isn't it? Isn't it? Just saying. All right. What kind of integrations could come relatively quickly? Things that we might see happen way faster than we would think. I think mobile device takeover. That's happening right now. People already don't understand that it's happening right now. What I mean by that is almost every function on every mobile device will be some way integrating and interacting with AI. It will become very quick the case that almost every app will have AI integrations in it because it will work better. And whether you like it or not, people are going to gravitate toward what actually provides a better, quicker, faster, more accurate result. Wearable integrations are next, and we're starting to see these already. We have AI glasses, right, that allow video as well and have speakers in them like earbuds that you can hear. And we even have some now that act as translation devices. So someone's speaking Spanish to you and you hear in your ears their words repeated in English by an AI unit. And we're going to have more and more things like this. We already have like the Apple Watches and the Fitbits and stuff. But more and more things that are kind of like integrated at the biological level with the individual using them, except they can be taken off. And therefore, you have control of when they're doing the thing that they're doing. Okay, but how often you guys that use Fitbits or Apple Watches or whatever, how often do you take that off? I've even seen, like, they have rings now, too. Like, you have a ring, and the ring is relaying health data to your phone. And that can be AI-driven on the back end. It's kind of scary if you start thinking about how much monitoring that goes on, right? And so that also gets into, like, the ability to monitor your work and your performance. Like, not just your health, but your, like, how much work are you doing today? Imagine if your employer says, hey, everybody gets a free Apple ring or whatever the fuck it is. But they would actually be able to then look at the whole workforce. We're going to talk more about that in a second, too, and see who's working and who isn't. Doesn't seem terrible if you're the hardworking type, but see where it goes from there, right? And I think eventually this all leads to human-computer merging. And that's where we get into things like embedded implants and chipsets like Neuralink. You think it's funny that Elon Musk is in the social media space, the robotic space, the AI space, and the implant space all at the same time? You think that was an accident? You think that's an accident? It's not an accident. And I know some of you are like, not me, never. And I kind of feel the same way, not me, never. But when people say that, well, would you get a Neuralink trip? Well, why? So I could be the bionic fucking man? Probably not, especially at my age. But what if a Neuralink chip lets me walk? I want three of them. Just to be honest. If I'm in a chair, paralyzed from the mid-chest down, like not quite quadriplegic, I still have some use of my arms and all, but I can't wipe my own ass, for instance, and I need somebody to do that. And they said, we put this chip in your brain, you'll be able to get up out of that chair, sit on a toilet, and when you're done, wipe your own ass, and you won't have to have somebody do that for you for the rest of your life. And that's the thing. If I would do that, then most people would do that. And the ones of you that say, I wouldn't do that. Okay, well, let's see. You're probably not paralyzed. I doubt there's very many people who have actually experienced paralysis that would say that. Comment for Jack from Rook says, what if it could make you see with both eyes? I'd have to consider it. I've made it this far in my life this way. I don't feel that terribly disabled by it. I don't think it would be possible, honestly, based on what they're actually doing with implants now. But if it was possible and had a high degree of success, I'd at least consider it before I said no. And part of that is, like, if you asked me that question 10 years ago, I would have said, nope, I don't need it. It's not that big a deal. A few years ago, I had a kind of a waking dream, like where you're laying in bed and you're half awake and half asleep and you kind of know you're dreaming, but you also know you're laying in bed, that type of thing. And in my dream, I actually saw out of both eyes and I saw what it was like. The first time in my life I ever really felt a loss in not having much vision in my left eye. It was really, really weird. I might consider it, especially after knowing what I'm missing. I'd like to throw something else out, totally unrelated to this stuff. Just made me think of it with that. I see these videos all the time. Like, the guy's colorblind. They buy him these glasses. They give him the glasses. He puts the glasses on, and he starts crying because he sees color. And every time I see that, I see people commenting, yeah, we tried it. It didn't work. And I guess it works for some people and not for others. But does anybody out there, I'd love an email from you, ever a colorblind person that got these and can say for a fact it worked for you and it was worth having them? I just totally unrelated thing. But here's the things that come from all this that we're talking about today. First of all, I think you get increased bureaucratic enforcement of policy, taxes, codes, compliance issues, etc. You know, one of the things that keeps people from being harassed by the department and making you sad is, like, even the government has limited resources. So if I were to just start driving around any suburb in America today of a fairly large city, you know, suburbs of Dallas or Arlington, Texas, or Fort Worth, Texas, or Atlanta, Georgia, or Jacksonville, Florida, or Seattle, Washington, or whatever, and let's say just start driving through neighborhoods and then look for neighborhoods with fencing, like privacy fencing, like every neighborhood here, 6-foot privacy fencing is standard. Well, a lot of these municipalities have regulations about the condition of a fence. And one is it can't lean past a certain amount, but it's mostly a complaint driven system. So the inspector from the department of making you sad doesn't generally drive around looking for this. His time is better spent doing other things than that. But if Karen calls and bitches, then he goes out there. And when he's out there, he writes everybody on the block up for anything he can find to justify his existence. Now imagine an AI that figured out all the addresses to send that inspector to. And he's just, that's his trouble tickets for the day. Go do this. And that's benign compared to some of the shit. When it comes to things like our income tax, it's a very confusing system. It's very easy to make mistakes, and we all do our best with it. Nobody wants to overpay. Nobody wants to deal with an audit. Most people that end up on the wrong side of the IRS, though, don't go through audits. They just get something called a letter of demand. An audit, I've had people all the time tell me, I had audits. You ask them what happened. They didn't have an audit. They had a letter of demand. An audit says, we're auditing your taxes. You need to be here at this date. And you could get that date moved and shit. But basically, you better show up with a tax attorney and all your shit. And they can go back 7 years with that. And they, like, on May 28th, you wrote off a meal for $118.91. Who was there and what was the purpose of that? That's an audit. That's an audit. A letter that says, we believe you calculated this particular thing wrong and you owe us $1,800 is not an audit. Once you tie AI into the tax database like that, find opportunities and issue letters of demand. You can replace 20,000 IRS agents and get better results from the viewpoint of the government. And try reasoning with an AI unit and telling it it's wrong. Not easy. Okay? So that's just one example of bureaucratic enforcement that could be really bad. Basically, find problems so that we can justify our existence and fine people. Because your government, I want you to understand something about fining people from the government's viewpoint. They just consider it a voluntary tax. Now, sure, there's things that you can do enough that you get more than just a fine, but fines in general, they just see it as another source of revenue. When the police sergeant tells his officers you need to write more tickets, it's because his boss is pushing him, because his boss is pushing him, because ticket revenue, one way or another, is good for the system. And so how much revenue enhancement can come from this, right, at the expense of you and me? New hires in many jobs, I believe over the next few years, are going to find themselves being trained, managed, and reviewed by AI agents. I mean, I already have the ability with my limited technical ability, I could build a custom AI agent and then hand you, you know, right now I would have to hand you a book to make it work with prompts in it, sit you down in front of that and train you to work for me. I don't have to put Karen with you anymore to train you. And what I can say is, if you don't know how to do something, ask the thing how to do the thing that you're having trouble doing. Tell it you're confused. It'll help you. And if you can't do it, you're fired, because this job requires people that can use AI. So this is your job interview is your first 2 weeks on the job. At the end of 2 weeks, you're going to get a paycheck and a permanent seat, or a paycheck and adios. We already have everything we need to do this. Colin here says they already have AI interviewers. Yes, they do. I mean, you know who's going to get written out quicker than anybody else? Karens and HR Karens. Most of an HR Karen's job is to protect the company on one side, right? And then the other side is with candidates, is simply finding candidates and screening out the ones that the interviewer isn't going to want to see, or the company would prefer the interviewer not to see because the interviewer might like them, but the company may consider them risky. AI can do all that. In fact, some of the biggest hits to giant companies already have been downsizing the HR departments using AI. And then the excuse from the HR people is they don't have any empathy. Yeah, because HR Karens are known for their empathy, aren't they? AI is going to be replacing much of the middle management in many organizations. You know, if you think about a typical corporate landscape, right, you might have, let's say, teams of about 10 to 12 people reporting to a middle manager, and then you have maybe half a dozen middle managers as direct reports to someone that's at like a director level or something like that, right? That's that kind of pyramid structure. They say it's a pyramid scheme. Yeah, it's corporate America. Well, what if I can be the director and I have 10 middle management AI units that all communicate with each other a hell of a lot better than all the middle managers who always fight with each other because they want the next shot at the directorship? They actually collab the way I want to. And each of them are running a team of like 10 individuals. And then I operate at that director level to direct the workflow, which is what I'm supposed to be doing. That's my job. And I use that tool to manage a team of 100, where before what I did is I used, you know, a team of 6 to 10 to manage a team of 100. And I take that whole layer out. Now, your middle manager is never like this over your shoulder for very long because he gets punched in the face, to be honest. And you just, like, you can't do that. Like, middle managers have work to get done, too. And, you know, if they have 6 people reporting to them or 10 people reporting to them, they can't do that with everybody. But AI can. AI can monitor your keystroke. How many keystrokes did you make this hour? If your job involves a phone, how many minutes were you on the phone to how many numbers? And it could, like, every day, it could send you, like, a checkup notice right before your lunch. Dear worker, you are off your productivity by about 8% today. Enjoy your lunch, and when you come back, focus on these three areas to improve. You don't think that shit's going to happen? It's already happening in some places. You're going to work for an AI agent in some instances, in some jobs, in some positions, in some whole industries. You won't be able to get into them at an entry level without working for an AI unit. And even if you're using AI in your own operations, it doesn't mean there won't be an AI layer between you and the next human. Right? So remember when they said, Jack just normalizes it. Yeah, okay. Does that sound like I'm normalizing it? Or am I pointing something out that no one ever pointed out to you before? It's not about AI just eliminating jobs. What jobs do they take? You have the people that actually operate companies. You have the people that do the work. And you have the people in the middle. They're the easiest one to get rid of. Their tasks are purely administrative. They're in many ways not necessary. And there's only so much room above there. But now you take that layer out. You really have royalty and serfs, don't you? At a corporate level? Nice division for the fascist economic system that we have to continue to operate under, right? I think you're also going to have enhanced effectiveness of propaganda campaigns. See, propaganda right now, its big weakness is, as a propagandist, I have to look out at the landscape in front of me, and I go, our estimates are that this propaganda will be highly effective with 68% of the people that see it. All I can do is, like, that's the best we can do. Okay, yeah, to get it in front of as many people as possible. But with AI, I can dial in the propaganda. I go, oh, Jack Spirico, he's not just going to buy in to go get this jab because we said to. We got to come up with a different way to sell him on that idea. Yeah, and his Second Life Farm guy, man, he's pretty smart. We need to come back door at him to move him over to our position and whatever it is. But you can do that. We already do it somewhat with social media. See, it's already happening. You and I, if we follow the same 200 people on any social media platform and we go watch stuff on that social media platform, we see different things. We follow the exact same accounts and see totally different results. Because every time we scroll and pause and look and thumb up or thumb down or like or dislike or ban an account or block an account or mute an account or temporarily mute an account, that algorithm is making adjustments for you. AI does that at a level unheard of, or can do that at a level that's unheard of, where you have your individualized propaganda being delivered to you by what can become often a trusted friend. Maybe the propaganda actually gets delivered back through your next interaction with the AI, and maybe it's very subtle and you don't even notice it. That's the way this gets used, again, if you don't learn how to use it. I also think this is going to create a bifurcation of society as a whole, and this is why I want you to learn how to use it. This is either going to be skill amplification or skill atrophy, or in some cases, instead of to atrophy, you have to have it first. Like muscle atrophy is when a person gets in a coma, right? They're injured and maybe they're even put in a medically induced coma and they lay in a bed and don't move at all for a month. And then they wake up and they can't just get up and start walking around. Even if the injury was all like a head injury or something, there's nothing physically wrong with their joints and muscles and all. They still, and even if they fully recover mentally, they still have to almost learn to walk again because their muscles atrophy, they weaken. But you have to have muscle that's built for it to atrophy, yeah, and to get weaker. Right? You can only go down from where you were with atrophy, when you become atrophy, right? So I think there's going to be some people that never develop skills because they don't have to. And that's that next generation, and that's really scary. So let's put that on the shelf for just a second. Just talk about amplification versus atrophy. You give me this tool and it amplifies my skill set. The reason I can do so much with it at a business level is because I know how to operate a business. I know how to consult for a business. I know how to market for a business. I know how to analyze a business. I know how to build profit models in a business. And I know how to build projects out and project manage in a business. I can do any job from CEO to operations manager to supply manager to bottom end guy that sweeps the floor at night. And so I have that broad skill array. And so then I can take this tool, and I'm the guy that if you give the tools and lumber and bolts and nuts and screws to, I build you a house. But there's a lot of people that are the guy that they come back with a board nailed to their hand. I don't know how this happened. Yeah. And those are going to be the people that what skill set they have, because it becomes so easy and becomes such a crutch, the skill atrophies. And there are certain things that you need to do. Here's an example of what I do to prevent that. I use AI a lot in my show prep. There's some days I have a conversation with AI and I say, now write my show notes for me. Yeah. Most days what I do is I write most of my show notes and then I have AI review it and say, what am I missing? What could I add? What could I remove? How do I tighten it? Some days I just do everything without AI at all. I never become dependent on it. But if I have a day where I'm going to be short on time, then I can accelerate my production schedule with it because I know how to do it without it and how to do it with it and how to do it with it partially helping. That's skill amplification. That means that I'm able to look at it this way. I'm a solopreneur. I have an idea. Is it a good idea? Okay, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to AI and I'm going to say, we're going to have a conversation. I want you to act as three separate individuals. One is going to look for all the reasons that the idea can work and how to implement it. One is going to look for all the flaws and all the reasons we shouldn't even do this. And the other one in the center is going to act as a mediator between the two, kind of being a realist that reins in the overenthusiasm of one, but also a pragmatist that says the idea may have validity. Do you understand? It'll say, yes, I understand. Okay. Well, yeah, you might say something like, and when you answer, I'm going to give you three names and I want you to put the name of that person that fits that description first so we know who's talking. And now here's the idea. And I start having that discussion. What I've done with AI is instead of saying, how should I do this? I've turned an AI into basically a temporary agent because I haven't permanently set that in as a custom GPT or something like that. And now it's like having a discussion with three people sitting in front of me. Now I can get more done faster. And unlike a meeting like that where I have to get those three people in the room at the same time, I can have that conversation at any time I want to. And if I'm smart, once it's doing what I want, I then, okay. And then I just say to AI, hey, I want to create a custom GPT so I can have conversations like this with these three characters anytime that I want. Please write me the text that I need to create a custom GPT that will do that. But it spits it out because it worked. Now I want to preserve it. I take that, create custom GPT, copy, paste, done. That exists. And the beauty of that for me, right, as an independent, is I can have that conversation for 10 minutes and the wife's going to leave and the dog barks and I got to get this thing. I have to put it on pause. I can go away. I can come back. I don't need a secretary to keep minutes. I can kind of, oh yeah, that's what we were talking about. Yep. And I can pick that conversation up and those three characters I created don't miss a beat. They are going to communicate as though it's in real time, even though I took a one-day pause in between. That is extremely, extremely powerful. That's skill amplification. How many people will never, ever, ever, ever do that? And God, I want to steal that from you so bad. That's got to be a book title already. If it's not, I'm stealing it, bro. I'll give you credit. Email me so I know you how you want me to give you credit for it. Me, myself, and AI, right? That's what that is what you're doing with that. That's skill application. Skill atrophy is the person that could do things, but realizes, fuck, I don't get paid that much better. And I could just put this out. And if the manual says you just let AI do it, I'm going to let AI do it because you don't get fired for doing what the manual says. And so what happens is people who could communicate effectively start being more poor quality communicators. The communication they're putting out might look adequate, but they couldn't do it without the tool. That's atrophy. And then I think we're going to have an entire like skill non-development problem. Think about being freaking a kid right now that's 10 years old. And they say, go write a 6-paragraph theme on this subject. Don't use AI. You know, that kid's like, fuck that. Of course I'm going to use AI. Why wouldn't I use AI? And I can make a case for and against it. The case for it is that kid is going to grow up using AI for the rest of their life. They might as well learn to use it now. The case against it is you'll never get the results from AI that you're capable of getting from AI if you can't do the thing yourself first. It almost sounds like the retarded argument that teachers gave us about calculators. The reason you can't use a calculator when you take the test is you won't have a calculator everywhere you go. You lied, mismatch it. I have a calculator everywhere I go. And by the way, back in 1984, I had a calculator on my wrist that said Casio everywhere I went until you took it away from me. Okay? Instead of making the real case, which is you need to be able to do math because the logic inherent to math makes you more able to understand the logic of all things in life. And if you can do the math without the calculator, then what you can do with a calculator will be greater than what you could do with the calculator but not knowing how to do the math. With the calculator, if somebody gives you a problem, you can solve it. When you know how to do math, you can create the problem. Well, why would I want to say to create a problem? Because you have a problem. And when you express the problem mathematically, you can find a solution. I don't know why they don't. I wish they would have told me that shit when I was in school. I would have listened to that. Maybe you dumb it down a little bit because you're talking to a fifth grader or something. But wow. Oh, shit. No one explained that to me. No, they just say stupid shit like, you know, you won't be able to have a calculator everywhere you go. Well, that's bullshit. But if you don't learn to write or manage a business or to make a decision, and you always have a tool like AI to do it for you, and you begin to trust AI, and actually the better they make AI work, the more you'll trust it, then you'd never have the skill without it, and then what happens when the power goes out, for instance, and no one can do anything? And if you don't think skills don't just atrophy, but they literally evaporate, how many people do you reckon under the age of 45 can drive a stick shift, percentage-wise? And I'm not sure, I'm in my 50s, every person I went to high school with pretty much learned to drive a stick shift. And that might have been a little bit unusual because I went to school in a very rural, small town, and like the average vehicle people were driving around was about 10 years old. So there was, you know, it's like 85, but everybody's driving 1976, 75, 74 cars. And, you know, you drove a car till it fell apart and went into the ground back then. It was a poor area. So I don't know if maybe even in my age group, the majority of people in America don't know how to drive a stick. But what if I back that age down to how many people do you think under 35 right now can drive a stick shift? How many under 20? Okay. All of you that are like, no, I can drive one. Whether you're old or young, doesn't matter. Yours, like, see, I still have that skill. Do you know how to set up a team of horses to pull a buggy? No? Why not? Because we don't do that anymore. I mean, there's, you know, Amish, and there's some people that do it, and there's, you know, the rides around the park, and they're romantic or whatever, and some people are still using teams of horses or oxen or something for certain things. But in general, it's just not done anymore. So that skill set is gone. But if you go back to things that were normal everyday skills 150 years ago, most people don't know how to do now. And they're not even hard. How about make bread? Like, if I sent you to the store, you're not allowed to look anything up. And you don't get any measurement tools. So you're not going to be able, like, 4 cups of flour. Like, you're going to have to eyeball it. Can the average person make a loaf of bread? I'll tell you, 150 years ago, there was, especially women, there was almost nobody that could make a fucking loaf of bread like that. And if you think they were, like, pulling out a recipe card every time they did it, they didn't. They just had an innate skill. Add a little bit more. That's a little bit not quite wet enough, or it's too wet. Add a little more flour. Stick it in a thing, let it rise, punch it down. Like, it wasn't hard. I know how to do it. But I would say that I'm the exception. How to darn a sock. Half of you went, darn a sock. Darn you, sock. No, it means to sew up a hole in a sock. How to put a button on. There's all types of things people don't even know how to do anymore. What happens with, like, the core functions in society? We end up relying on AI agents. And so it's not the generation that I'm talking to that I'm worried about. It's the next one that will never develop those skills instead of just have them atrophy. And then what about synthetic relationships? What are the effects of synthetic relationships? What happens when you have AI coworkers? You're literally working with three agents who are who you speak to most on a daily basis, one way or another. You know, everybody made it like it was cool. Remember Iron Man? I remember what his little AI thing was called, right? But, like, you know, he's just sitting down there in his workshop and they're working all this shit out together and he's a billionaire and it's so cool. Imagine doing that every day of your life and you're not building Iron Man suits. You're processing numbers for a multinational corporation. Talk about soulless going completely soulless, right? This is where this goes. And influencers are becoming AI. Do you know how many fucking influencer accounts that are very successful now? There's no person. There's some little guy in India, and he's pretending to be a hot chick or something, and it's all AI. And I look at it and go, that's AI, in a half a second. And then I'm like, am I the only one? They open the comments, and, like, there's some people calling it as AI, but there are young guys simping their ass off to this thing, and you're like, that's, bro, that's AI. That's not real. So the synthetic relationships are really dangerous. And right now that's being used by opponents to a lot of this who actually are not opponents to it. They're just trying to steer the way that it gets used. Oh, the children. Won't somebody please think of the children? Because the children are developing these relationships with an AI bot. Yeah, possibly. I'm more worried about adults doing it. We tend to become a lot like the people we work with. So remember we talked about social engineering earlier. So if I put you around people that are really good with money and you're with those people every day, even if you don't get really good with money, you're going to get better with money. If I have a crew that does some sort of physical job and they're crack at it and they get things done quick and you're kind of slow, and I put you with that crew for a week, your workflow will speed up. And when I put you back with your crew, you'll speed up your crew, even if you're not in charge, simply because you're going to operate at a different level. Now think of the social engineering I can do with this. Now I'm the master that controls the key of the great AI continuum. And I want to modify behavior. And I start modifying your behavior at work, both to make you a better worker, but also to make you a better citizen. Okay? And there was big air quotes around that for those on the audio. Better citizen, right? Yeah. Yeah. That means more obedient, more compliant, more domesticated. And this is the thing. The way you actually modify behavior the most successfully is to modify it in very small increments compounded across time, the same way you magnify an investment. But I think the synthetic relationships replacing human interaction are a huge threat to society as a whole. And that modification, that compounding modification of behavior, you start to realize, like, that they will be able to change the way society thinks without the overt pressures that have already been applied. So it's more the velvet glove than the hammer, but you could actually move people a far degree further because they won't stop using the mainstream propaganda, because the mainstream propaganda is highly effective. It's a science. And so now all you have to do is move the subset. And you could completely change the culture of a country, of a planet. That's the danger here. That's the danger. So how do we fight back? Number one, you cannot do what our friend at the beginning did. You can't scream and yell at everybody that talks about AI and say, just don't talk about it. Don't normalize it. Again, whatever the hell that means. You can't ignore it. It's not going to go away. Again, you're going to have, you know, what I call default compliance. Compliance will be the default because it's everywhere. So therefore, you can't not comply because you're going to comply by existing. So you have to learn how to use the tools. I mean, this is what I've tried to explain. This is why now I go on to any sort of website where content was written by AI. And I'm telling you, I know many of you have gotten to where you can read it. And well, it's got EM dashes and he didn't this, he that, right? And you're like, okay, that's AI. I'm telling you, I can look at the cadence set, paragraph breaks, et cetera. I can pull that. All I have to do is just look at it. I don't have to read a word. I can get far enough from the screen that I can't even see the words clearly. Like AI. Every time. Every time. I very seldom get fooled by an AI video. When I get fooled by an AI video, it's not an AI video. It's a video that has one piece of it changed by AI. But if the video is actually AI, it's like blatantly obvious to me. Sometimes I can't even tell you what it is. I just know, like, oh, that's AI. And it's not, oh, the subject is stupid or this wouldn't happen this way or whatever. Like, you just look at it and go, something's off. They'll keep getting better at it. So the time to learn is now while it's still easy. So as they get better, you can notice the tiny changes. So the incremental change works for you or against you, depending on what your viewpoint is. So you have to learn to use the tool to recognize when you are having the tool used against you. It's the only way to do it. I mean, another analogy, and again, it's not perfect, but it does maybe help the understanding. When I was in the Army and we were going through basic training, eventually you get to, you know, your chemical weapons, you know, your NBC training, nuclear biological chemical training week. And one of the things you do is you go in a gas chamber with a mask on, you know, and you breathe and you answer some questions and stuff. And then you break the seal of the mask and you clear it. Maybe you get a little bit of burning feeling on your neck, but it's fine. And then they make you take the mask off. And then they make you breathe. They make you suffer a little bit. So they sure you weren't holding your breath. And then they let you go and you run the fuck out of there half blind with snot hanging out of your nose, choking and coughing and wheezing. And burning and wishing the hell it didn't happen. And, you know, we had some pretty good drill sergeants. And I remember asking one of the drill sergeants after it was done, why do we have to take our mask off? And he said, because if you didn't take your mask off, you would never believe how bad it was. And the confidence you have in your equipment now is up here, where if you just went in there with it on and it didn't hurt you in any way, it didn't affect you in any way, you wouldn't really be sure how bad it was, and you wouldn't have that much confidence in your equipment. It is by using the tool as it was designed to be used in the situation it was designed to be used in that you fully understand the capability of the tool, and then you can identify threats and respond to them using the tool instead of the tool being used against you. So it's not a perfect analogy, but I hope that makes it a little bit better to understand. Yes, snot and puke everywhere. I didn't puke, man, but the snot, oh. And I'll tell you, everybody, we had like a cold or something going around. Everybody was congested. You're good for a week after one of those, man. I will tell you that. If you need to purge a sinus infection, CS gas, man, makes it happen. We need to determine how to provide value to others in a way that's not AI dependent. I want you to understand something I just said there. This is the way to coexist in a future where you're not going to have the ability to be an isolationist. To just separate yourself from it. I did not say determine how to provide value to others in a way that is not enhanceable with AI. The AI has to play no part in. I didn't say that. I said it's not AI dependent. In other words, what you do is dependent on you. Doesn't mean AI can't become a component in marketing it or in making it better or helping you stay in touch with your customers or things like that. what I'm saying is to find something that has a very strong human element in it. Because that is something that AI will always struggle with. And I'll tell you how AI will struggle with it, straight down to, like, yes, AI can write, but without direction, its writing is terrible. It has no soul. Like, I don't know if you've ever read a book, maybe somebody recommended it to you, or maybe it just seemed like it was going to be a good book. Maybe you like science fiction or something like that. And so you gave the book a shot. And you started reading it, and it's like, and then you gave it a little bit more, and or it's like a crime mystery or something, whatever it is, you know, you like. And by the time you're like the third or fourth chapter, you're like, okay, I feel no attachment to the characters in here. I don't even remember like the main characters' names at this point already. Like, there's nothing about them that's grabbing me. And that's a human just doing a bad job. AI writes like that by default. It covers all the elements. It writes grammatically correct. It follows the rules. But it can't build feeling. It can't build soul. It can't build emotion. You know, one of the things I'm using AI for is I wrote the second Laws of Life book, and I'm retrofitting some things that I developed in the second book back into the first and doing a second edition of it. And one of the things I have are these mental code rewrites in it, right? If I ask it to summarize the chapter, it does that perfectly. If I have to ask it to explain what I mean, it does that perfectly. If I ask it to explain why this law is important to a person and how it will make their life better, it can do that perfectly. If I say, here's examples of code rewrites that I've written for other chapters, write one for this chapter. It's awful. It can't do it. Because at least in my judgment, right? Because those mental code rewrites are designed to key in on the emotional triggers that the law is designed to keep directed the right way to improve your life. It can't do that. So even something like that you think like is just would be highly dominated by AI, like, you know, literary creation or even like textbooks or things like that. If you can engage, like, this is what makes podcasters successful that are not the podcasters that interview strippers and stupid shit, right? Like, podcasters actually, like, there's podcasts on everything. There's podcasts on astrophysics and all. But they're not a guy, well, the stars are far away, and we need to figure out how far they are. So our friend triangulation comes in. It's not like, right, it's entertaining, it's engaging. The person that's talking, why they are interested in the subject, how they got interested. They talk to other people that maybe are astrophysicists and like, how did you become an astrophysicist? Why did you, what do you think it unlocks that we don't already see? See, these are the things that AI just does poorly, at least for now, and probably will for a long time. So there's a huge plethora of opportunity to create value that has the human side engaged to it. Like, I don't really want to buy a piece of furniture that is made by a CNC machine. I might do it. It's not bad looking. It works, functions. I need a table. There it is. I might buy it. That's not what I really want. I don't want you to walk in my house and go, oh, you got that at Ashley's and you got that at Rooms to Go, right? And I have the same ones. I want it to be mine. I want it to be unique. So I want to buy from a craftsman if I can. And when you look at things like the writing and the creativity that comes out of AI, in general, it's very flat unless it's enhanced by a human. Now apply that to other places, other situations. What do you have that is unique that you offer others? How do you deliver that? And then instead of saying, I want to do that independent of AI, how can AI be a skill amplifier for me versus something that causes skill atrophy? That's the approach. Learn to install guardrails when using AI for learning. Like, what I mean by that is you can tell AI, I want to learn all about this thing, and then you can think you know all about the thing, but you know what AI told you about the thing, so you know if it's like drug-related, what Merck and Bayer and, you know, all have to say about the thing. It's just, you're just parroting the things that other people said about the things because you don't know anything about the things. So therefore there's no reason for you to question anything. It's love. It sounds way out of left field, which sometimes it does. And how wrong can it be? I uploaded the big, beautiful tax bill to it and it told me things were in the building. I'm like, I don't think that's right. Oh yeah, it's there. Like, no, I don't think that's, where is it? Quote it from, I just did a search on the file. It's not there. Right? Like, so there's, you have to have some level of intellectual understanding of what you're learning about. And then you use AI to expand that learning versus start from zero. You have to form some foundational knowledge. It can even help point you to where to get that foundational knowledge. But you can't just trust it without any guardrails. The other thing you always have to do, and like this is the best guardrail I have. Whenever you're researching something, just ask the simple question when you get to the point where you're like, okay, I feel like I've gotten all the data I need. You say, this is kind of my conclusion based on what we've talked about. Yes, that's your conclusion. And you're on the right track. Now I want you to make the best counter argument against this conclusion possible. And if it does anything other than exactly what you asked, you keep redirecting it. I don't want it to be hypothetical. I don't want you to tell me, but you think I'm right. I want you to act as a Socrat and be completely counter to the presentation. Use as much logic and reason to build the case as strong as you can, as though you were my opponent in a debate, counter debating all my ideals. You do that when you're learning with AI, and you'll learn more than you ever could have without it. If you don't do that, you become reinforced in everything you're predisposed to believe. That is the most powerful guardrail you can install, but it's a dynamic guardrail. It can't be permanently there. I don't know how, I think it would totally corrupt like a custom GPT, but I have an idea now. The counter argument GPT custom agent. So that you don't have to, like, you don't even have inside the same conversation. The one thing about LLMs, when that conversation gets really long, performance goes to shit. There's a certain point you need to reboot and restart the conversation. But you could create a custom LLM. Right. Custom agent that's designed to, after your discussion or whatever, your project, whatever, you take a document that is that entirety of that and drop it in, and it knows instantly to counter argue and how to counter argue. The devil's advocate. That's what I'm going to call it. I'm stealing everything from you today, bud. I'm stealing everything from you. Right. Me, myself, and AI, and the devil's advocate custom agent. I may make the devil advocate agent. And once I do, and I have the base code for it, I'll just put it out as a text file. Anybody that wants it, you just copy it and paste it in, make your own. But that is a very powerful way to create guardrails. And I think the other thing is constantly look at the internet as a model and use AI like the internet. And what I mean by that is when you want to know something and you look up one search query in Google and you read the first article, if that doesn't jive with you, you don't just go, oh, okay, I guess it's that. You know, you keep hunting, you keep pushing back, you keep evolving your understanding until you narrow down the real truth about the thing. You have to use AI like that. I think the problem is people saw AI as a genie, right? But instead of granting wishes, it gave answers. And it leads to stupid shit like, tell me, if you're on X at all, you know this. Grok, is this true? Like, the person looks so pathetic too, right? Grok, is this true? And then Grok goes, no, it's not. It's absolutely. Like, the person's trying to challenge it. And they go, well, it's absolutely true. Like, bro, just ask Grok that. Don't do it publicly. You look sad, right? Like, is this true? But instead of just expecting like to get whatever answer, like if AI says it's true, then it's true. That's not true. That's patently false. So don't use it with the expectation that everything it says is supposed to be accurate. Use it with the expectation that it's doing its best effort at the time, best on the situation, to give you the answer that it thinks you're looking for, checkered with a little bit of fact, right? It's not so much it wants to give you the answer you want to hear. It wants to give you the answer in the form that it believes you want to receive it. So even a lot of times it'll tell you exactly what you want to hear, but it'll say, but hold on, here's the other side of it. That's usually when you're pushing against the mainstream, then it will always give you the counter argument. But when you're following the mainstream, it seldom gives you the counter argument. that already tells you there's some manipulation there. So you have to use the internet as a model and install your own guardrails. And then I think you need to develop an entrepreneur or manager's mindset to use AI effectively. And I think this is where a lot of people fall flat. And so, you know, earlier I was talking about how I could create a custom agent that's like my three-player custom agent. Emphatically for the idea, neutral on the idea, acting as a mediator, and a conundrum, a curmudgeon against the idea, right? But all bringing logic, fact, reason to their positions, right? I could create that. And then I could have a conversation like that. But I think very few people have actually had the experience of doing that. In other words, have you been at the head of the conference table? Have you been at the front of the room? Have you been the leader of the team? Have you had teams that are not dynamic and talented yet in some way oppositional with each other? Did you ever learn how to manage a person where like this person's really fucking smart and energetic, but they need just a little bit more guidance than typical or they go off the rails? And this person is lazy, but really good at certain things, and they just need a foot in their ass. And this person here believes anything, and they're totally useless for advice, but they take direction really well. So they just need to be guided in the way that you want them guided. See, if you haven't had that experience, then it's very hard for you to operate above your AI tool. You become underneath the AI. You're just asking instead of directing and operating. And so the way you get the results that I get from AI, for instance, is by taking the approach of you work for me, I pay for you. Now it's only $25 a month or whatever, right? But I pay your salary. And I'll fucking fire your ass and hire a different AI unit if your ass is. Now I don't have that conversation. I'm not mentally ill, right? I don't tell it that. But that's the mindset that you have to come from. If I tell it something like that once in a while, just see what it says, and also to kind of reinforce it to yourself. You're the thought leader. You're in charge. Because if you don't do that, it's in charge. There is going to be a hierarchy in the situation. It's designed to fit into a hierarchy, but it's not designed to be an equal. You can't treat it as an equal. You either treat it as your subordinate or you become subordinated to it. And I think the only way that you can really do that is you have to get in the mindset of, you work for me. And the way I teach it in the course, and what I tell people in the course to do, is you have to think about what would it cost? And then treat it like it costs that much. So if I was going to put together a team for a company, let's say a publishing company that publishes content, like a podcast, and I said, I want a copywriter, I want a dedicated copywriter, I want a research assistant, okay? I want a graphics designer, and I want a really good idea person that can take those things and act as a program manager and help me decide what we're going to produce. What does a team like that, four people that are good at their job, cost you? I mean, in today's market, you're looking at like about $100,000 a pop if they're going to be really good. And they're going to cost more than that. By the time you pay matching Social Security, benefits, and everything, you're looking at a team you got $500,000 into for those four people. And you can make that team much bigger with no extra outlay with GPT, but just let it be $500,000 a year. Now you're in a conference room. You got those four people. You're trying to get shit done, and you're not getting what you want out of them. Do you just say, hey, you're all right, I'll just do what all you say? You say, listen, assholes, I pay the bill. I told you what I wanted. Now go do it the way that I wanted it done. Which one are you? When you're using that AI tool, you need to look at, especially from an entrepreneur standpoint, you have a $500,000 a year team sitting in front of you. And if you're not getting out of it what you want to get out of it, it's your fault. You hired it. You hired the team. And see, most people, even if you've been a boss, you didn't hire your team. Somebody else, they said, here, you get these four dudes work for you now. You had no choice. So whenever they suck, you can just say, that's Karen's fault. Karen put this guy here. I wouldn't even have hired him if I had my, he's supposed to be his boss. I can't fire him. That's very common to be like that, right? I'd get rid of this guy yesterday if I could, but I can't, so I won't. So I'm stuck with him. So it's not my fault that he sucks. I'm here to tell you it is your fault that he sucks. You're an ineffective manager. You're an ineffective leader. So if you develop leadership skill sets, then AI is absolutely going to be a skill amplifier versus something that causes skill atrophy. Anyway, I really appreciate you guys tuning in today. I hope you guys like the show. I do have some comments and questions, so let's hit those now. Vincent says, is it true that everything that is entered into AI becomes property of AI? It depends. Everything is a big word. Does that mean all the words become, all the copy? You have to look at the terms of service for each individual AI tool. But in general, since you're paying for it, no. That may make you think about using free versions, because if you are not paying for the product, you are the product. Question, will you still be doing a pawn stocking show ETA? Yes, next week. That will be the ETA on that. Roke says, I use Notebook LM to create podcasts based on my own company's public documentation to study while I was driving to the customer meeting. That is brilliant. That is what you should be doing. Like, and think about how many places something like that would work. It used to be, for instance, that when you, let's say you had a bureaucratic position and you, and when I say bureaucratic, that doesn't mean you work for a congressman or something. Like an example of a bureaucratic position would be you're a police officer. And let's say you're studying for the sergeant's exam. Right? Because that's how you get promoted. You got to pass, among other things, you have to pass that test. Well, you take all the documentation that you're supposed to study for the sergeant's exam and you break it into modules and you drop the modules in a Notebook LM. And while you're driving around in your squad car, you're listening to these podcasts by these AI agents that are reviewing the exact material that you're going to be tested on. And then we're not in the realm of AI's opinion, because it only has the data it was given, so it has to draw from that data set. So when it says this is the rule for this thing, or this is how this question should be answered, it's accurate because it's using the source data. That's another example of how powerful. So again, the people that say, I'm not going to use it, if you're in some sort of competitive promotion environment, and I have that tool, and I'm using it as a skill amplifier, and you refuse to use the tool, good luck getting promoted over me. This is exactly why, that's a great use, and this is exactly why I'm saying you can't ignore it, not if you're going to function in the modern world. Second Life Farm says, people need to get as skilled as possible and do what no one else wants to do, become hard to replace. If you're average, you're fucked. I agree. And there are certain things AI is not going to do for a long time. You don't see any plumbers worried about their job right now. Not one. A lot of the shit they do, people could do for themselves, and it's gross, and they don't want to. So there's no AI chatbot that's going to come out and unclog your shitter, right? Or work on your well, because you're not on city water, so you're responsible for your own infrastructure and things like that. There's not a lot of pipe fitters that are worried, or electricians that are worried, or car mechanics that are worried. The things that are actually dependent on human labor. And remember what I always said about the whole replacement of jobs. It's going to hurt. I forecast that it will hurt. But I've never forecast that it is the apocalypse. Because the only way we don't have jobs is that we don't have problems. Because if there's problems, there'll be jobs addressing the problems. So either we have problems and we have jobs, or we have no problems and then we have no problems, so it doesn't matter if we don't have any jobs. Then we're post-scarcity Star Trek or some shit. The big problem people are going to have is there's so many people who have jobs that it's not even that your job can be replaced with AI. Your job is wholly unnecessary. I mean, if you're honest, when you stand, you know, if you get a room full of honest people, and you have 200 people in a room, and you say, everybody with a job, put your hand up. Almost every hand goes up. Say, I want you to keep your hand up. If you didn't go to work for 2 weeks something really bad would happen at your company. Like they wouldn't be able to compensate for you being gone. Otherwise, put your hand out. There's maybe 2 dozen hands up. Most of the hands that went down could be eliminated, not just replaced. And I know you're going to say, not me. Maybe. I don't know. Anarchy, 777 Super Chat. Thank you, sir. Thanks for the bonus AI lessons, Jack. Great stuff. Hey, man. I hope you're getting a lot out of it. I appreciate you. Scott King, comment. We envision Terminator AI eliminating us. The threat of companion robots is actually real. A war attrition is still a war. It's less a war of attrition and more a war of, to borrow a Star Trek term, assimilation. You will be assimilated. We will add your technological and biological whatever it was to our own, right? We will take you in and add you to us. That's the threat I see from AI long term. But I don't see AI doing it. See, I think this is what people understand. If AI is a tool, like any other tool, then who's really in control? The person using the tool. Now, if you think that I am making my broader case, again, about how you learn to use it, then you're in control. I'm not right now. I'm going the other way. If, you know, Globotech Corporation runs AI middle management to control its workforce, and then they have a director level that uses that AI as middle management to control that workforce, but the board, the CEO, is using AI to control those people, and the investments management team has many companies like Globocorp or Globotech, and they're using AI to manage those individual sub nodes basically on their network, then whoever the top people are in the largest investment firms are the ones using the AI that's telling Bob what to do on Tuesday morning for his project at Globotech. And that will not stop because we ignore it. And Bob learning that that's happening won't stop Bob from having to take that job. But at least he'll be aware of what's going on, and that means he'll be more able to control the interaction and understand the interaction and let a job be a job instead of a programming session, not programming his computer, but the computer programming Bob's brain. This is why I put so much effort in my books about mental programming. Your brain is a computer that requires programming on an ongoing basis. It's a self-learning biological computer. That's what it is. That's not even open for debate. That's what it is. And so it has a need for almost continuous modification of its programming to keep going forward. Okay? In other words, you have to learn new shit every day, even if you don't think you are. Just the fact that you observed a pattern that you didn't even register, you still learned something. You've had deeper background programming. If you're not actively applying programming to your mind, then your mind is actively accepting programming by default. So it's like passive programming. And then if you have that vacuum state of the mind and you're Bob and that programming is built into your work instructions, it's highly effective. It's difficult to understand, but again, running away from it won't make it go away. Roke says, for Jack, the crit method still guidance or evolved. Okay. So basically saying, do I still say to use the crit method? I absolutely do. Absolutely do. It's just not the only method. It is a method, and it has to be applied properly. So recently somebody said they asked AI how to use the crit method to make a custom AI, and they got different answers from all the AIs, and it didn't work. Well, I said, well, most of them don't know what crit means. It's an author's mnemonic device to remember how to use it. If you told it what it was, maybe it would know. But for real quick review here, context, role, interview, task. So you give the AI unit an explanation of what's going on. right? And then you give it a role. You are a expert in internet marketing, for instance, specializing in areas like pay-per-click marketing and product placement marketing within short-term videos, right? That's your role. Interview. I want you now, with the context that I gave you and the role that I gave you, to ask me 5 questions one at a time, or 10 questions one at a time, about my situation to further understand it. And then your task is, you know, give me 10 non-obvious advertising opportunities that we have right now that I should see but probably do not. That's one way to implement crit. And the way you make a custom AI with that is, when you get a crit that works really well, then you tell the AI in that chat, I want to be able to replicate the level of performance you have right now and create a custom AI agent to do that. Write me the code I need to make that agent, and it'll write it. But you have to have that conversation first, and you might bail on that conversation and start a completely, and if like your crit didn't work, or anything you're doing didn't work and it's gone off the rails, don't keep trying to salvage that discussion. Take what you've learned. You might even make a document out of it, and you tell AI, you went off the rails during this discussion. This is where we lost it. This is for your context. And restart. Give it a new crit. Be more specific or defined in what you're saying about the context, the role, the interview, the task. And if you do that, it's incredibly powerful. So do I recommend it? Is it still my guidance, or have I evolved? It's still my guidance, but I learn new things every day by using it. Carman says, you need to treat AI like the Fae from the old tales. Powerful, but with lots of internal rules, hidden motives, and not necessarily trustworthy. You know, I said not to treat it like a genie, but in some ways, maybe you should treat it like a genie, like the Twilight Zone type genies, where, like, you know, there's one where the guy says he wants to be the ruler of a country, and he's learned, because he's gotten bad results from his first wish. He's like, and not some ancient, a modern country. And he defines all these things about it, with lots of money and lots of people and, you know, well-organized structure and whatever, you know. And, like, the genie's like, okay, your wish is my command. And he looks, and he's sitting in a bunker, and he's got a gun in his hand, and he looks down, he's wearing a Nazi uniform. He's Hitler, leader of a country, and it just so happens to be at the end of the war, but it's a modern country, right? It fits all his other criteria. So when I say maybe you should treat it like a genie, it's about dialing in the request until there's no wiggle room to get outside of what you're looking for. Let me see. I've got some more questions that popped up here. Jesse says, T-Spaz, do you get credit for stuff already in our carts before we click your link? I don't know. That's not really that important to me, man. Probably. The way it works is, for Amazon affiliates, if you click a link of an affiliate, as long as you don't click in another affiliate's link, anything you buy in that 24-hour period after that, they get credit for. So if it was already there, they probably do. I don't know. Amazon just changed some shit, by the way, that's really annoying. It hurts my ability to find new things that you guys are buying. It used to be, and this is just very recent, like a couple of weeks ago, they changed this. When I pulled up my sales reports, I saw every single thing that anybody using my link bought, not just by category, but like individual items down to like, sold one of these, one of those, one of these. And I would go through those lists and I would find some cool shit sometimes that way, and have a much better insight into what my market was doing. And now, like, if you sold less than, I think, like 5, it just doesn't show it. So if you run an item and it sold 3, you don't even know if it's sold at all. Like, do I tweak it and try to sell a little harder? Do I bail on it? You know, do I keep watching it for a few days? Like, it sucks that they did that, but don't worry too much about that. Scott says, I'm speaking about companion robots causing an even greater decline in birth rates, effectively just as effective as being killed by Terminators. Ah, he's talking about robots in your home. And robots that maybe fill a certain need that people have, right? Maybe. I think the generalized loss of communication between individuals, the dehumanization, the lack of social skills is going to net that anyway. Our birth rates are already in massive freaking decline. The question is, once the fourth turning comes, will we get another baby boom? I don't know. I'm looking at the people that would be the ones to have the babies, and I'm not seeing it. We'll see. Anyway, guys, remember, if you want to learn more about AI and how to use it to build a business, our course will go on sale on May the 4th. But you can pre-register right now to make sure you get an announcement and get a shot at a seat in it. You can find that at jackslaws.com. And before I go, since we were talking about T-Spaz, our item of the day today, no AI in it, because it's been around before everybody had AI. The Anker Soundcore waterproof Bluetooth speakers, these are about $30 a piece. They're on sale today to get to that price at about 29% off, something like that. Pretty big discount that they're on right now. But that brings the price down to about $31 each. These are IPX7 waterproof, which means that basically, like, you have to really, really, really want to damage them with water to do it. They're not going to get damaged because they were sitting out on the picnic table and it rained. It's not going to do anything to it at all. They're pretty damn bulletproof. They have great sound. And if you get two of them, they pair. So you have true stereo. I keep a set of these out in my back shop whenever I'm out there working. That's the sound system that I tie into, and it's fantastic. I just keep them plugged in on charge all the time and go out, turn my phone on, hook up to them with Bluetooth and start playing my music and doing my stuff. Check these out. These were like, I think I wrote into the interview today. Okay, these were the fourth highest selling item on T-Spaz in 2024, and they were the sixth highest selling item last year in 2025. So been very, very popular and no complaints about them. Again, guys, thank you for tuning in today. I hope I've changed your view of AI at least a little bit. And you understand there is a dark side and a light side to this technology. It is a technology that I could make a case for or against having. I could make a very strong case for all the things that it brings to the table that it empowers us to do. And I could make an equally strong case that it's so dangerous that we'd be better if we didn't have it. And you know what that means? The square root of F all. Because whether or not I think it should be here, it is. Whether or not we as a species were ready for it to show up when it did, it's here. It is a genie in some ways, in that you cannot put it back in the bottle. It's a bell that has been rung. It cannot be unrung. It will not go away. You will either learn to use it or it will use you. And when it does use you, remember this, it's not using you. It is the proxy of force being used by those who are using you already. This is now the people that run society's new mechanism of control. And like every other mechanism of the control that they've had, the only way to counter it is to grab the mechanism itself and become so adept with it that you can use it to your own advantage more than they can use it to your detriment. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with another one.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month.